Happy Tuesday, everybody. We made it.
We made it again. We're back.
Another episode in a row. We have a streak.
Let's not jinx it. You know what? This is a passion project, not a job. So I am happy to do it every week, mostly. As long as we can.
I always have a thing I want to start with, and then it just flies out of my head as soon as I start.
That's
yapping.
Okay. You can't stop the yap, girl.
We can't. Our whole bread and butter is built. It's an empire of yapping. I broke out a very old, not old in general, but like old to me, fragrance that I haven't worn in a while. I was invited to that Givaudan Haute Parfumerie exhibit, which is really cool at their office.
Yeah, how was that? I'm so jealous.
It was so cool.
I was invited for once, by the way. I just couldn't leave the office. Yeah. But I'm happy that you could go.
I was not sure who it was for because it was like a mix of people like freelancers who do fragrance stuff. And then it was like influencers. So I was like, what is this for? But just happy to be here.
I think those houses are starting to really like doing events. Just they're like, oh, wait, we can do it too. All our fucking brands do it. Let me do it.
I love any excuse to visit the Givaudan offices. They have a nice office, dude.
Like
all the bathrooms have free tampons.
Oh, word.
Which is such a funny thing to say, because please, just basic human rights. But beautiful office. They converted a couple conference rooms into a past, present, future of perfumery. And they had
sick.
Yeah. And they had just like on display these like really old bottles of Schiaparelli, Shocking, and all the original Nina Ricci, like Larry Tom and Robert Piguet, and like really ancient books of handwritten perfume formulas that was like in illegible script.
Perfect.
So it was really cool. And Robert Piguet Fracca was obviously like part of iconic fragrances of the past. And then I remembered, oh, I have a bottle of that I just never wear. And so I broke it out the last 2 days, and it's just, it's so good. And I understand why it's like the white floral blueprint now. I get it.
Sure. I'm so jealous of you. I love a vintage. If there's one thing I like more than a vintage perfume bottle, it's a collection of them.
Yeah.
I like all that old shit. But yeah, I wish it would have been like a cocktail. Number one.
I know.
It's nice out. I'm trying to party. Two, I want to see it. Givaudan. What's good?
It was like a 1 day event. But it looked like it took a while to set up. It was quite elaborate. And they showed us how Carto, their AI machine, works, which is really cool.
Oh, fuck. Are you serious?
That was really
cool. Wait, I saw that on your story. I didn't realize. Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I'm mad.
They had somebody who's a recent graduate of the Givaudan Perfumery School doing a demo on Carto. And I was like, wow, imagine being a modern perfumery student and just being like, boop, I can do everything on the computer. Like, how much faster it is. One of the coolest things that like I think I was like abstractly aware of, but just hadn't been explained to me clearly, was they have their perfumers do exercises or little like workshops with like certain parameters of what if we made sense based on these accords or based on like this concept. And they just showed us a room of basically like a free-for-all concept exercise from their perfumers. And there was one from our guy, Rodrigo Flores Rue, and he had one that was called... It was in Spanish. It was called like New Spice. His whole concept was everybody thinks that spice is warm and it brings warmth. So I wanted to make a cold spice.
Oh, cool.
And it's based on a Sichuan pepper accord. And it was so good.
Oh.
And they had, actually, they gave us a bottle of one of them. It's called Mother Rain by Christine Hassan. And it was just based on like the very nostalgic, motherly, comforting vibes. But it just smells like vanilla ice cream musk.
Ooh, come on.
It's so good. I'm like, the girls are going to love this.
I love that.
And then I asked Joy, I was like, what happens with these perfumes, these projects? What do you do with them? And then she's like, well, they go in our archives and we show them to clients just as an exercise of what we can do or as like inspiration for their brands. Or sometimes some clients will just look at our archives and buy something or pick a formula based on that.
Right.
So I really hope that whatever brands choose any of these formulas, because they're so good. I almost wanted to be like, can you give me a bottle? Just like an extra one.
Literally, we got to record from there. You know they'd let us.
I'm sure.
Joy, let us take advantage of your brand, please. It's not that hard. We ask for little in return. Also, make us a custom fragrance that will be globally
That's what
successful.
I was thinking. I was like, can we do that?
Yeah, it's, are you looking to launch a brand with two faces that are gigantic legal liabilities? Say no more.
It made me think it'd be really fun to be a fragrance consultant in that regard. Let me spend someone else's money.
Dude, all consultants are just big-headed, loudmouth airheads like us. Like, just saying shit.
And I want that for us.
And of course, I'm joking, but I'm also not. We have both met enough people doing that type of stuff that I'm like, baby girl.
When I started freelancing after I left Allure, I did some consulting gigs and I was like floored at the nothing that they wanted from me.
Oh, yes.
I was thinking that I was really going to plan out a whole like editorial strategy for them and blah, 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 and do all this research. And then they were just like, so what should we do? And I was like, seriously? What? And I'm like, wait, this is the best scam ever.
It is. That's what they pay us the big bucks for, Sable.
Gosh. Maybe that's my next ambition.
Maybe. I haven't been doing essentially any freelancing lately, but I did, I don't know why I'm telling you this. I did write, Faith reached out to me to write about Lover from The Maker.
Oh my God.
I know. She and I, like, I mean, we're mutuals and internet friends, and she's been my editor for a while, but she always knows like what to reach out to me about. Not that it's hard. My personal brand is basically just like Valentine's Day or being, you know, but I don't really have time for freelancing right now, but she reached out and she's like, do you want to cover The Maker, Lover? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
So I turned
it. I remember we talked about Lover a couple of weeks ago, but is that their newest scent or just one that you like? Okay. So it is
newest scent. Yeah.
Oh, I really want to smell all of them.
Yeah. Let's.
Do they have a discovery scent?
Yes. They also have a brick and mortar, like I said. So we should just all.
Oh, for some reason, my brain refuses to let go of the lie that the hotel is upstate somewhere. I don't know why I keep thinking it's upstate.
Where is it?
I think it's in Manhattan.
It is fully not. It's in Hudson.
Oh, wait. There's the Maker Hotel shop on 16th Street. So we can just go there. We don't have to go to the hotel. But I will
take... Our carless asses.
I would take the hotel trip.
Well, they're fucking giving it to everyone else. So anyway.
Just putting it out there.
We're manifesting. AKA making baseless demands.
That is basically, I feel like that is what manifesting is, TBH. At least the way it's been co-opted by the girl boss agenda.
That's true. And good for them.
I'm not manifesting. I'm just saying things I want and doing nothing about it.
If you say enough things are going to happen, something's got to give.
That's true.
You know what I mean? A broken clock is right twice a day, famously.
Very fair point.
Can I just say that the biggest clownery of all was me being, and this is an industry term, a little bitch about Sabrina Carpenter and her fragrance when it came out.
I remember you were weirdly hostile to it. And I was like, Tynan, it has everything you love. And you're like, no.
It's literally a pink brick and it smells like sugar. What is my fucking problem? But yeah, I was being really resistant to it. I just don't think I cared. Yeah. And that's allowed. Now she's the biggest pop star in the world. I've been obsessed with her for over a year, thanks to you. And we could have got her on the goddamn show. And now she's doing Coachella. Yes.
I'm always skeptical when they dangle celebrities.
I don't think that many people were checking for her, respectfully. Her star has risen quite fast.
Maybe at the time, but... Yeah. I feel like the scent beauty scents do a great job with custom packaging and all that. That's really great. But I do feel like the celebrity component of it, it's just very canned.
Perhaps.
If anything, I think what it just comes down to is if the celebrity in question is just a fun hang. Because that makes for a great episode as well. Someone who's just a fun hang.
I think she does look like a good hang. And now we'll never know, thanks to me.
I don't remember getting pitched her for the show, but...
I don't think we necessarily were. Okay. However, I'm just... facts are irrelevant to me at this point.
Yeah. Wait, okay, so have you gotten her scent?
No, because now I'm too embarrassed to ask for it. So that ship has sailed.
Oh, they will send it. Trust me, they want to send it to you. They do.
Probably everyone wants it, so...
I wonder if that's true. There was a second one that was like caramel.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit same, but...
She should do an espresso scent. Hello.
Missed opportunity.
Scent beauty, where you at?
Missed opportunity.
That would actually be really
fun. That would be really cute, honestly. I think more musical artists should come out with perfume. speaking of musical artists coming out with perfume, I received this really beautiful art scent package from Dublab, and it's like hard
from
to
who?
Know. Dublab, they're like a music studio something.
Okay.
I don't know. Everyone else I know who does music nowadays, who is like basically all into electronic music, they're like, oh yeah, I know Dublab. And I'm like, I don't know anything. But
sure.
A friend of mine from my past life as a band person, he did all the design for it. So he was like, hey, I should put you guys in touch because they do scents. And they had this really beautiful box set of, I think it was like 12 perfumes based on songs that was done in collaboration with Art and Olfaction. So there was like The Velvet Underground, Os Mutantes, Alice Coltrane, Prince, and they all had a perfumer from Art and Olfaction made a scent for a song.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and then they had different artists do like art for it. It was really beautiful. Such a beautiful design box, and each little vial had its own slot, and it came with blotters, which you know I love.
Yes.
And then the weirdest thing was that on the box it says the scents are meant to be smelled on paper, not on skin.
Okay.
So I was like, wait, you can't wear these? You can't? They're like, they're not actual fragrances. It's just like you listen to the songs and you smell the smells, which is cool. But what is this for?
Yeah. It's odd that they're not even, that it's specifically don't put them on your body or anywhere else but paper, you know?
Yeah.
But is that for sale?
You can buy the box set. It's $200, which is a lot, but like the box, the whole packaging, I'm like, okay, this was really expensive to make. Everything looks really luxe, but
yeah,
you'd have to just be one of those art book buying record collector type people with some cash to splash. It's a very cool thing. Some of the scents were so good. I was like, I want to wear this. This should
That's
be
extremely
perfume.
Cool. Yeah.
Why not do that? Please. Right.
I wonder if it's just like they didn't want to test them. You know what I mean?
That's what I was thinking too. Maybe it was just you have to get things allergy tested. You got to do all this certification stuff. So I'm like, yeah, that's really expensive. So if you just wanted this to be like an art exercise and a beautiful experience, then congratulations, you have done it. That was really cool. And then I was just like, what do I do?
That's so funny.
Yeah, it lives. I feel like it's one of those objects that just lives on your coffee table for someone to be like, what's this? So you look very cool and cultured. And that is what it's doing now.
I think that's enough, though. That does sound like a really sick idea. I would love to. I'm going to play with that next time I'm over.
I know. My perfumer, Joey, was just like, I need to smell that, please. Like, you can have it. It's fine.
Yeah, it's all yours, dude.
You will appreciate this probably more than I will. But
right.
Until they start making them perfumes, and then.
And then it's game over.
I love to see scent for the sake of art in the world.
Yeah.
And I think more people should do it. Although, as I'm finding out, it's very hard to do and expensive.
Good gravy. The more you know.
But I'm so close. I'm so close.
Are you?
My brain is just not wired, A, for project management, and B, for the sourcing and the operational shit. And it's like forcing a round peg into a square hole, which like, I'll do it.
There's a lot to consider.
Yeah, it's like, I'll do it because I have to, because there's no one else to do it. But at the same time, I'm like, this sucks. Everything's expensive. Why am I poor?
You'll figure it out. You always do.
Honestly, I'm just so psyched that the smell is good.
Yeah.
I have the last dregs of my sample vials, and I was wearing them just like around and out. And every time I wear them, I always get compliments. So I was like, I made a hit.
That's right.
I made a
hit. I love that.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry if this packaging is a little, but trust me, you're going to love it. Yeah.
Speaking of your scent, Sable, what do you smell like today?
In a very me move, I have mixed two scents together. As aforementioned, I am wearing Mother Rain, care of Givaudan.
Okay.
Care of Christine Hassan at Givaudan. Thank you. With Fracas.
Oh, wow. You're really committing to the bit.
Yeah. Okay. So like Fracas has this, it's a white floral, but it's like very pillowy. And there is like a desserty nectariness to it. And then mixed with the vanilla musky creaminess of Mother Rain, I feel like it's just this harmony of marshmallow, white floral. And I smell so comforting. And I don't know, I can't stop smelling myself. I smell so good. But earlier today, you know, when you take medicine on an empty stomach that you're not supposed to, and then it just derails your whole morning because then you're like, oh no, I'm nauseous and I have to eat something to not be nauseous, but I feel too nauseous to eat something. Like the first 3 hours of my day. And then I was like taking deep breaths and just smelling this fluffy cloud of comfort. And I was like, this is actually helping.
Oh God.
Like, this is actually making me feel better. after I very stupidly took an antibiotic on an empty stomach. But
you know what? It happens. It's fine.
Now I know. I was like, I don't care. Let the bacteria take me. This isn't worth that.
I'm over it.
I'm over it. Tynan, what do you smell like today?
So this is not a repeat for me, but it might be a repeat for the show. I cannot remember if you have worn it. Forgive me. And I thought I was going to hate it, and I don't. I'm actually really interested in it. I'm wearing, I also don't know how to pronounce it, so shout out to me. It's by Aesop, and it is called Oranon.
Oh, yeah. It was like one of their new ones that I wasn't invited to or given.
Well, they randomly reached out to me and they're like, you want some fragrance? And I was like, okay. And because Aesop scents just like really aren't my thing, and that's fine. There are a lot of people's things. But there, what is that collection from them that came out like 2 years ago?
Othertopia.
Yeah. That I really do like. Mm-hmm. They did hook me there. And I believe this is part of the Othertopia.
It was like the last one.
Okay. Yeah. And it's not something I reach for every day, but it is really nice. And it does, it is in conflict with my idea of Aesop in that it is interesting.
Is it like sandalwoody?
No, it's, what is it? It is hay, frankincense, and myrrh. So shout out to the Christ Child.
And maybe they did send that to me, actually.
I feel like they may have.
That sounds familiar. I do know, I remember going to an event of theirs, maybe like last spring.
Yeah.
And I do remember it being frankincense and myrrh. So
I think we've covered this before.
I think that might have actually been it. Yeah. Or not.
Anyway, it showed up at my doorstep and I was like, all right. And yeah, I don't know. I put it on before I even looked at what was in it. And I was taken with it, quite honestly. It's pretty bold and it starts off oddly way sweeter than it sounds. I thought this was going to be like an amber moment. And it does. There is like a sticky sweetness to it, but it's like this overtone that sort of rounds the edges of the frankincense and myrrh, which can both be like teethy. And I love incense as an idea, and fragrance, sometimes it really wears on me and can get almost like headachey on me. But this is really nice. It's pretty heady and has a lot of ace to it. And it does have that little tiny bit of what I'm interpreting as sweetness. I'm also a little sick, so I'm a little congested. So who knows what this actually smells like? But no, I can smell it.
Everybody's getting sick now.
Something's going around, dude. Yeah. But no, I really enjoy this. It would not be an everyday thing for me. And I don't know, when I think incense, I think cold. So that sort of repels me a little bit as an idea, not as a scent. But this is really nice. It is simplistic in the really positive way, you know what I mean? And feels like it does feel fully formed and thought out, but it's not trying to throw a ton of shit at the wall, because I think incense, again, to me personally, can go left if you try to do too much, and this just lets it rock. And yeah, I really love it. It's great.
Yeah, I remember I really liked the Aremia scent from the other Tiffany's collection.
Yes.
And that to me is like an outlier as well, because it's so soft and floral. Mm-hmm. And it's like a very watery floral.
Yep.
But when I think of Aesop fragrances, I always think incense and cedar and sandalwood.
I just think of like wood and like dirt.
Clean, expensive man smell. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of. Clean, expensive man, the type of man who would gaslight you.
Yeah. Guys that wear Aesop are motherfuckers. So let's just put that on record. But no, I really like this. I wouldn't hate if a man wore this around me. So I hope someone's taking notes. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I remember they sent me recently one of the Othertopia scents out of the blue. There was notice.
Yeah.
And it came with a ceramic nose.
Oh, that's right. I saw that. Freaked me out.
I was so confused. I was like, huh? And I was like, do you spray the... Is it like one of those ceramics that like absorbs scent? Do you spray the nose?
Oh, right.
What is it?
They just did it to be bothersome.
I think it was so quirky. It was almost out of pocket for them. So I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah. What's happening? What is this?
This isn't a burlap sachet.
I'm very excited about our guest today.
I feel like we've been talking about Julian Hexagon fragrances for ages.
Mm-hmm.
Not a Perfume is one of my favorites. And I don't know. I just never really thought about the concept of a founder, because to me, it's such a quirky collection with definitely it's an entity. So we had the opportunity presented to us to have Romano Ricci, who's the founder of the brand, on. And he's an interesting dude because his, and I didn't know this until I was doing research for this episode, that it's like, oh, he's the great grandson of Nina Ricci. And then when I looked up news, it's, oh, everybody freaking knew that but me. Cool. I don't know. When family legacies do perfume, I remember when we spoke ages ago with Ben Kriegler, he's the sweetest dude and just had such great stories of his family history with perfume. So
yeah,
I was really excited to talk to Romano about all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And the brand has a new fragrance out called Juliet, which we were sent this week. And I thought it was interesting. Number one, the name was self-referential. Whenever brands do that, I'm like, okay, this must be like the piece de resistance.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this, the self-titled album.
Yeah, exactly. I remember seeing a bunch, like I was seeing like all the promo on Instagram before I got to smell it. So I was like, okay, it's going to be a cherry scent. And then when we got it, the scent was so unexpected. It's like the quirkiest non-cherry.
It's such a new take on cherry that it feels like it is a really unexpected interpretation.
I cannot tell you the notes to pinpoint it, but I can say like it's almost like a translucent glass cherry that's like very cold and brisk. There's something like cold and crisp, and I don't know, there's something like a cold blast of air about it, and like very glassy and angular and faceted.
Which is not unlike the rest of the collection, right? So it's not exactly an outlier. It's just an outlier for cherries. You would know better than I would, though.
Yeah. I feel like I've smelled all the scents, but it's like I've smelled them at a Sephora. So they're not logged in the brain.
Right.
They're not in my noggin. But I think Not a Perfume is the only one I have. So that's like the only reference point.
Mm-hmm.
But like all of the Juliet has a gun fragrance. They all have these like little niche followings from like the heads because they're so quirky and unique and unexpected and unconventional.
And they've been around too. I feel like Juliet Has a Gun has just, not to bring up Sephora again, but has been the niche mainstay in Sephora since way before the rest of this shit happened. You know what I mean?
They were like one of the first, if you know, you know, popular artisanal niche luxury brands. So
yeah.
And I remember on our episode with Vikan Arsanian at Euro Parfums, the new owner of Commodity Fragrances, like he started Euro Parfums because he was like, oh, I saw that Juliet Has a Gun was for sale and I really liked that brand. And I was like, who is distributing it? Then he's like, oh, I can distribute it. So I was like, wow, this man made a company just to buy this, just to distribute this brand.
Love that.
That was great because then we got reconnected with the brand too. So
exactly. And here we are.
Here we are. So we will get on with the episode. Okay.
I'm Romano Ricci. I'm the founder and artistic director of the brand called Juliet Has a Gun, which launched in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So a long time ago, almost 20 years next year. A fantastic journey I've been going through with a lot of liberties. The brand resembles myself a lot. That's what I can say. It's a brand that's about women empowerment. Growing up in a family surrounded by fashion because my great-grandmother was Nina Ricci. I didn't want to work in the family business. I wanted to create my own universe and my own ideas with the risk that it takes. But I have to say that I'm very grateful that I took that decision, as it's been amazingly personally and business-wise, it's been fantastic.
Nice, nice.
I love that. I didn't know that Nina Ricci was your grandmother until I looked it up. And then I was like, oh, Ricci, of course.
It's not something that I put up, actually, because this is not the aim of what I did. I didn't want to enter perfumery by saying, hi, I'm the great grandson of Nina Ricci, and please pay attention to me.
Yeah.
It was the opposite. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make my way and to bring something to the industry and to perfumery. And we are talking about like 2005. So the landscape of perfumery was very different to what it is today, with much fewer brands. You can count them the finger of the hands.
Yeah.
When I started, there was like Artisan Parfumeur, there was Acqua di Parma, there was Annie Goutal. Yeah, it was very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea was to say that you don't have to be 45 or 55 to look into something which is a little bit different from what the market is proposing. And I entered with a very striking name, It's called Juliet Has a Gun.
Yeah.
I would never have expected that it would have the success that it has today.
Yeah.
It was a big risk. It was a big risk, even if I knew that being part of the Ritchie family was going to bring me a kind of amplifier of the voice. I was not expecting that 20 years later, I would be speaking to you about that. Right. What I discovered in the meantime was the fact that the subject by itself is much deeper than what I thought it would be. I started by saying that I was going to launch like 5 fragrances, and we started at Colette in Paris. And I remember exactly the day when I presented to her the project. Even Francis Curgeon, which I started to work with.
He created some of your first perfumes with you, right?
We did together the 2 first fragrances for Juliet Has a Gun. Mm-hmm. But when I came to him, it was not, yes, I was introduced, but he looked at me like, you're this like Ritchie guy, this kind of, with a lot of negativity. Mm-hmm. I told him like, I want to launch a brand called Juliet Has a Gun. I was like a young realizer coming to see a great actor. And he was not aware about that. And I said, Juliet Has a Gun. I showed him the logo and he said, all right, why not? And it was nice. Interesting. Because at the time, he used to be launching, he was between Quest and Takasago, and he used to launch Narciso Rodriguez, which was an amazing fragrance, and still a fragrance that has a lot of power on me. So I was aiming for the best, and I had the chance. It was at the Parc Monceau Avenue Hoche in Paris, and I remember exactly the look when I arrived at the table. He said, what the fuck do you want? And the moment I to him what I wanted to do, because I think he was expecting something very traditional and very what was successful at the time. And from there we developed a relationship together, because I'm a very stubborn person, he is too. And so we developed 2 fragrances together. Lady Vengeance and Miss Charming was the beginning of the story.
Wow,
it's a funny story.
The name is so unique. It's a departure from so many brand names, because for one, it's a sentence, which isn't very common, and it's very visual and imaginative. What was your inspiration behind it?
First of all, I think it's about women.
Yes.
That was very clear and very disruptive, and it still is. Mm-hmm. Look at the niche perfumery landscape. The fact that there's a gender affirmated in the name is very unique, because niche perfumery is usually more about unisex than gender. So this was what I wanted to express and the inspiration I wanted to develop. The second one is that it has a very striking name and it uses some very striking words. But I would like to specify, if needed, that actually there's no Juliet and there's no Gun. The Juliet is the Juliet of Shakespeare, and the is the metaphor for her perfume. So for our American listeners and fellows, it's important that you take that as a second degree, and that don't take it literally. If you look at in the last 20 years, there's never have been any Gun, any Juliet of Shakespeare in what I did. It's just the idea of a woman using the olfactive as a weapon of seduction. What I'm trying to do is that I'm trying to provide like invisible dresses that can make them more confident, or that can help them in their seduction process. Because in the end, that's how I looked at it. It's about seduction of ourselves. Mm-hmm. When you wear like an amazing dress, you suddenly feel more confident. You suddenly feel like a different character than when you're in a jogging. And that's what I'm thinking. And I like the idea that it's playful. I like the idea that it's not too serious, because there's always a lot of irony in what I do. And I never took myself very seriously. I feel that there has to be a sort of playfulness attached to that.
I think you're ahead of the game, because so much of the fragrance industry is just catching up to that now, because it's just taken itself very seriously for so long.
And it smells like it.
I'm not fishing for compliments. I'm really talking directly. I think if you're asking me, I think the future of perfume is very different from what we experience today. But I'm not going to talk about it today. But no, I think the speech about the seduction and the billboards in the street and perfumery, I've been living with it since I was a child, even with my grandfather. And I have to say that I've experienced the noblesse of what it was. Then I experienced the massness of what it became in the 90s, I would say. And then from the massness was born the nicheness with the fragrance houses that I spoke to you about with the Arhuch. Said, no, we were not going to be like the dream of Pierre Cardin, which was bring luxury democratic. But I remember, I still remember like the launching of the perfume Nina. It was like at the opera where my grandfather was, it was ballet and stuff. And the bottle was made by René Lalique and we were talking about crystals and stuff.
Yeah.
So what I was born with was a very different image of what perfume has become with celebrity perfume and stuff. I think the niche was born from that. It was born from this kind of downgrade of the big brands trying to sell a part of their histories through a product which is affordable. Because even if it's yours, it's affordable. You buy, but when you buy a Chanel No. 5, you buy a part of the history. And that's what is also very attractive.
I think Nina, it was like a red apple bottle that launched in, I think, 2006, but that was one of my first perfumes.
That's what you think is Nina. But if you look 10 years before that.
Not the original.
Exactly. Yeah. But me, it's a family story. It was a family story. So I was thrilled. And we almost hesitated to attack the new owners of the company because they transformed something very precious, a kind of dedication from my grandfather to his mother. To something really like an apple, nothing to do with it.
Yeah, very fruity, floral. I remember I was a teenager at the time when it came out and I loved it. It was like one of my I still have a bottle today.
But you're talking about
the new one. Yes.
I'm talking about the whole thing and the fact that the bottles were crystals and that it's a different kind of perfumery. And so in the 80s, the small perfumeries were bought by chains. And so promotion, discount, and getting low in terms of perfumery, because perfumery for me has started as an art and has become a big business.
When you started developing the first fragrances for Juliet Has a Gun with Francesc Cartion, he helped you make the first perfumes and then you took over. And so now you are the main perfumer for Juliet Has a Gun, right?
I started working with my cousin who's a perfumer. I started with the idea of Juliet. And what I want, once again, I didn't want to get into the industry saying that I'm Romano Ricci and I'm the great grandson of Nina Ricci. And this is a big part of the value that I'm going to propose. Not that kind of guy. I wanted to bring something to the industry and I wanted to take some risks. And Juliet Has a Gun was after like 5 months thinking about what can you bring to the industry when I talk to you about it. The whole traditional. I've been very good friends with the Creed House.
Yeah.
We're growing up together in the same village, which is 500 people. So we know each other very well. And we started like that, saying that there is space for originality and there is something to do with quality rather than mass market. As I told you, I started to develop the first fragrances with my cousin.
Okay.
I got frustrated because I'm a control freak. I said, I want to work with Francis. Can you present him to me? And she presented him to me. But he came much after the idea of Juliet Has a Gun and much after the ideas of the fragrances that we developed.
Okay.
And it was even at a certain point where there was one fragrance like Lady Vengeance that we were almost happy with. Mm-hmm. Was another one that we were not happy with. And so I started maybe the first 18 months of the adventure of Juliet together with Francis, but without forgetting that my cousin, which is called Isabelle Maybe, and Francis was at Takazagur already at the time, and he had the possibility of developing fragrances. When you start with so low quantities that the time that a perfumer spends on developing a fragrance is almost the same as when he does one for like Calvin Klein or for Dior, because the development is the same. The only thing that is quicker is that you have somebody in front of you that is giving you a feedback directly. Right. So you can basically, what I mean is that Francis came after the impulsion and the project. But what he brought me was a lot of credibility when I started, of course, because when you put Francis Turgeon, it was not known like he is today. But what I mean is that he came late in the project. I was targeting him as number one partner as a perfumer. But what he brought me afterwards was amazing. He's a master. Right. He understood before anybody what it is about to be a perfumer. And it was the beginning of Frédéric Malle. It was like the edition of perfumes. And he was one of the first to put the perfumer, which was always in the darkness, to put him in front.
Right.
And he understood all that. I'm not doing a broad appeal to perfume houses. I work only with one person, and I've been working with one person for 15 years. It's a one-to-one exchange. And I also have a very special deal with the fragrance house I work with. We work on open formulas. It means that it's not a secret. I know exactly what's in my formula. I have, I would say, a knowledge of 50 ingredients, and I can build and brief what I want very specifically. I know exactly what I want. And my quest is usually to go as fast as possible to the result that I have in mind. That's why I pretend that I am the perfumer, which I'm not, because I'm not a perfumer. I'm a fragrance designer. I prefer this term rather than the perfume. The big greatness of what I do is that I own the formulas and I know what's in it. That makes a big difference. And that's so something that the Creed taught me.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. Because usually the fragrance houses own the formulas that they make for brands.
They do. Yeah. And you know what they do? If I want to talk metrics, how do you say an appel d'offre in English? Like it's open brief or something like that.
Okay.
Okay.
If you say, okay, I want to launch a fragrance and here's the persona I want to target. Mm-hmm. And you have three or four perfume houses that are accepting to work on your project. All of them, they spend perfumer time on each to answer your brief. Mm-hmm. And after that, they have to spend a lot of money on testing their creation with people who are going to say, I love it, I don't love it, to test them. The big difference with me is that there's no testing.
It's what you like.
Oh,
yeah.
It's what I like.
Yes.
And I'm usually I'm a pain in the ass. I'm very stubborn.
It's good to know what you want, though.
But at least, and I heard it from Francis and I heard it from Philippe, I'm a pain in the ass, but at least I know what I want. Yeah. I'm pushing them to their limits. Mm-hmm. It's my vision. It only engages myself, but the process is much faster. I would even say that the faster it is, the better it is. I have spent like a year on formulas and usually they're the worst. And I have spent a month on the formula and they're usually the best. So it's strange.
Really?
Yeah. I know it's a surprise, but the truth is when you get into a formula, you try to have doubts. It's where you lose yourself. You lose the original essence. Yeah. I never start a formula without knowing exactly where I want to go. And the faster I get there, I have a very striking example with a fragrance called Musc Invisible, which was one of my favorite. Americans don't know about it because it doesn't sell very well, but it's one of my favorite. And I briefed him so well that the second trial that he sent me, I said, don't touch anything, it's perfect.
Wow. Okay.
And I have Citizen Queen. I remember it was a formula with 150 ingredients and stuff. And then you get into the nightmare, into the influence of others. Oh, it smells too. What I feel is important is that it's an opinion and that it's radical. And I'll say to my team, it's a dictature. It's not about compromise. That's how I envision what I do, even if, after all, it's also a business.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I think we're interested in hearing a little bit about your names of the perfumes, including there's Not a Perfume, there's Anyway, there's an Old to Dullness. Those are some of the most unique in tongue-in-cheek names that we've heard. Can you tell us about how you name your fragrances?
I would say, I can go even further. I say I'm one of the ones convinced that you don't only smell the fragrance, you also smell what in what you read. So mm-hmm. I play with the other senses. I love the name Ode to Dullness. Of course, less attractive perfume ever. I like because it suggests sexiness, desire, a lot of things. And that's what I wanted to express. And it's difficult today to be very striking with the name because it's really a little bit back down the line. But I have fun a lot with those namings. I also have fun with the colors. And if you look at the collection, maybe I want to go back a little bit on that. There's a lot of work on the product itself. It's not just a transfer butter with a sticker. There's a wheel of decoration and illustration of what I want to express.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what, in terms of keeping that line of thinking, in terms of the fragrance itself and its name, what do you think make the best fragrance concepts or what's the most interesting to you?
Say again.
What is it
to make a bestseller?
Yeah, more what There's do you none. Think is your There's best none. Inspiration? Not so much bestsellers, but when you chase an idea, what idea do you like to pursue when creating?
It's a very strange process. Especially in my case, we decided to make two new fragrances a year. And usually the public thinks about a new fragrance being just a fragrance. Just the end of a fragrance.
Yep.
In our case, with Juliet, it's much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about wording. It's about imagery. It's about social media. It's about 360 activation. When you launch a fragrance, it's not just a scent. It's also about eyes. It's also about what it brings to you. And underestimate that or not.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we provide with every fragrance that we launch, in our business, because we are still very small, we work with exclusive distributors around the world, and they are not our employees, but they are our partners, and they are exclusive in their countries. But we provide them with 100 pages of how to activate and how to present this fragrance. What happens behind it is about the customer. Does it speak to the customer or not? But at least you have to provide with a sort of activation book.
Yeah.
That it's not only a scent. You guys, and we actually, the scent creation is like maybe 20% of our time. All the rest is everything that I just spoke about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's the blur that the newcomers are thinking, because if you look at the retail price, let's say you sell a fragrance for $100 and you say, okay, it cost me, let's say, 10. Wow.
Right.
It must be a mine gold. The calculation is fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I complain about it because even if I love it, because I love the image creation and the DNA creation become, sometimes I think that we become like a creation of assets.
Yeah.
It's all about explaining what you do, and you have to get the chance to smell the fragrance. Of course, a bad fragrance will never make a success. There's a lot of good fragrances that will never make the success because they don't have
marketing. Universe.
I don't like the word marketing, but yes, it is also part of the game. And you have to be as precise on the marketing as you are on the scent.
Totally, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't get me wrong. There's one thing that I've witnessed, and that is undeniable. The biggest media is the scent. You can do the best marketing campaign of whatever you want with Julia Roberts and stuff.
Yeah.
If the fragrance is good, it will never sell.
Right.
And the best example that I have, for example, is not a perfume.
That's what I thought of.
I have to tell you, like the way that it was received by my exclusive distributor, national exclusive distributor, was, oh, it's great. I'm going to order 5 pieces. And they said, and it was like that. And 20 years later, you have no idea. People getting into a taxi cab saying, and the guy saying, what the fuck do you wear? But that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the scent. Or the marketing is...
Right.
The name, too, is it's such a mind trick because it's called not a perfume, but it is a perfume. And the innovation is that it's such a simple formula. Was that one of the ones that took you a month to make?
No matter the means, only the effect is important. Maybe that was one ingredient, 150, 300, or five. Who cares? Who cares? The client doesn't care about that. Mm-hmm. What he cares is that when he wears it, she wears it, is that she gets compliments. I invested in this fragrance. I want to get noticed. I want to have remarks, and I want to influence my audience.
Right.
And I want my friends to be jealous.
Yeah.
But that's love about it. Not a perfume has been launched in 2010. Never done like one. I have one image for the campaign. I've never pushed it so much. It's only to mouth. That's where I say, I always said, it's a fragrance business. It's not about marketing. Yeah. Marketing is important for the sparkle. Rest is about the fragrance. And it's the wearers and the entourage that makes it a success or not.
Yeah, it's true. Nada perfume is one of the most complimented fragrances that I wear.
Yeah.
That one always guarantees compliments whenever I wear it.
And there's no way that we can anticipate that. You see what I mean?
Because
you started the questions by saying, what is the secret of doing a bestseller? There's none. It's so strange. We don't master that. Hopefully we will never because the day somebody says, I have the key to do a bestseller, my God. No, it's disaster. It's the end of the creation. One thing I'm convinced about is that you need originality to stand out.
Yes.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Because if you're saying that, this one was a very good success, I'm going to inspire myself about that, and you make not a copycat, but you inspire yourself about that, it does smell in general. It does smell the compromise. Mm. And in the end, it's always a shitty thing. Sorry about my French honesty.
But no, we love it. It's fine. In chatting about not a perfume and how renowned it is, we're interested in your newcomer. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us about your latest perfume?
Juliet. About Juliet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just launched it like 2 weeks ago. It's a lot of emotion for me because, of course, the name Juliet for a brand called Juliet has a gun.
Yes.
Maybe I have to go to the shrink to understand what is my relationship with the name Juliet, because I even went further than that. I just had a daughter who was born like 4 months ago called Juliet.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
congratulations.
That's so lovely. Congrats.
As you can see, it's not all about marketing. But I think it's a beautiful name. There was always a time where Juliet was going to be part of the collection.
Mm-hmm.
It was the challenge of thinking almost 20 years later, what is Juliet in 2024?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kind of energy she has. I think she still has a strong character, of course, because that's might be one of the most true link between all of the personas that I've developed. Because I have women which can have many facets, but they always have a very strong character that the women I'm attracted to. Might they be crazy or even dull or like auto dullness? But they can take many facets, but they are strong and straight in their boots. With Juliet, yes, it's a fragrance. I was inspired by, I'm not usually into gourmand fragrances. I've looked into your latest podcast, which was about gourmand.
But
you know that fragrances are fueled by not natural ingredients. Because we don't know how to do fruity essences around that. So I'm not against synthetics once again, because not a perfume is a synthetic 100% molecular ingredient. And I think it's great. But I think when it exists in the nature, I think you should use them.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of the dark cherry in terms of metaphor for a woman. I think it's seductive. It's juicy, but it's also, it's a bit
venomous. Yeah.
It's a bit venomous. It's fruity, but it's venomous at the same time. And I like this idea. And when I developed the fragrance, I also put a lot of pink berries into it. Okay. So that is not something too much sugary. I wanted to create a tray of stylishness and of pretentiousness a little bit. That's what I'm trying to do.
I love that.
We'll see what the result would be.
Yeah.
But
it's a very interesting cherry. It's not like any cherry fragrance that I've smelled before. It's very multifaceted and it's hard to put your finger on.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very unique.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that it's going to be very popular. But we'll see.
I feel like it could have, even if it's not that popular, it'll still have a dedicated following of
for sure.
Some people who just love that.
Yes, but I would say that it's educated gourmand of our fruity fragrance.
Yeah.
Because the pink berry brings a lot to the, it comes to educate the dark cherry.
I see that.
Huh. Yeah, right. The effect is mysterious. It's very
good. It is.
Well, just, you have to smell it. Otherwise, with words, it's always a challenge to
yeah, it's hard to describe.
I had a debate with Francisco Jean at the time where he refused to do like olfactive pyramids. What does it tell you about what we do? With the same olfactive pyramid, I can make you like a fragrance from A to Z.
Sure, sure.
So it's just a matter of balance, about proportions. Mm-hmm. The exercise that we're trying to do here is very challenging because use words means different thing for anyone. So just go and smell it. And it's okay if you don't like it. It's great.
Well, I'm sure.
You have this kind of madness.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I'm sure to do creative work of any sort does take a lot of thick skin and being humble too.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like whatever you're doing is working. I respect someone who commits to his own bit so much that he names his daughter Juliet. He's committed.
Yeah, he certainly, it's always interesting to talk to a founder that has such a clear vision for what they want because not all of them do, which is also fine. There's many different ways to be a founder. And I say that not being one, but he certainly has a clear vision for his brand and what he wants to do. And by the sound of it and by the look of it, he's certainly accomplishing it.
I know. I feel like when it comes to creative direction, obviously knowing what you want is so helpful. But at the same time, having such a specific vision must also be frustrating because if you're like, there's a lot of chefs in the kitchen, it's just a lot of managing of understanding and communication with that. So,
yeah, listen, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but you bring any creative idea to life, whether it's your idea or someone else's, or you're just the one giving edits or the one making the edits, it's always a labor of love and or hate. And it's when I'm on larger team, personally, speaking from experience, when I'm on larger teams, I'm always thinking, God, this would be so much easier with a smaller team. But then when I'm on smaller teams, it's God, I wish I had a bigger team. You know, it's like, I just think working in any sort of creative is never fucking easy. And I could also be an accountant, but I guess I failed math.
Whenever I've worked with less people, like a smaller team, as you say, we're always complaining about lack of resources, but we get shit done faster and easier because we can just do it. And then whenever there's so many people that have to clear everything, and who technically are the resources that we would have wanted, I'm like, God, this is so annoying to have to jump through so much.
Exactly. And sometimes, and then you bring in, and I know nothing is personal. I know work is work. But personally, sometimes I have caught myself taking things personally when an idea doesn't get approved or like when I get what I think is the wrong feedback. And it's like, man, this sucks. Like,
you just don't get my vision.
But it's, I do not envy the founder life. Big props to anyone who can do it. Because I think that's a mental gym, like jungle gym that I don't want to jump through.
Definitely not. Like I say, I'm an ideas person.
You're an ideas person.
Yeah.
You're the consultant.
Yes. I'm a consultant. I'm not a conduer, but
no.
But anyway, I'm so glad that we were able to have one of the brands we've been talking about forever, have them as an episode.
Yeah, it definitely feels like we checked another one off the list in all the most positive ways, you know?
Hell yeah. Well, you can listen to more episodes and find us online at smellulator.live. We have our very cozy merch there and our hotline if you'd like to leave us a voice memo. You can follow us on Instagram at smellulator.mp3. I am at Sabletooth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later.